You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And good morning, or actually good afternoon. I keep saying good morning to Linda. She's like, Pierce, it's this afternoon. I'm Pierce Patterson, and this is The 10th Voice, the Saturday edition. Versus the other editions that I don't know that exist.
Aren't they all on Saturday?
Yes, they are. It's like, Pierce, are you here? Yes, I am. Actually, I'm very here, and I'm very excited to be on the air.
This is going to be a good show.
This is going to be an awesome show. And to give you a rundown of what's going to be going on the show today, of course, we'll have the 10th Voice News with Sandra Mead, who's joining me and you've heard speaking. We will have Gabe York and Brian Hinkey here to discuss the adoption of their daughter, Kennedy, and the excitement and not-so-exciting moments of that. Followed by, in the second half of the show, we will have Zach Petrick on the line to discuss the historical publication One Magazine that was published in the 1950s and 60s. Very obscure historical magazine. Very excited to have him on. And we will be doing the community calendar at the end of the show with Mike Popa. So, in the interim, first, this 10th Voice News.
Hi, this is Sandra Mead with this week's news. As always, there were too many stories to highlight them all, but here's a few we're going to run down. Starting out in Australia, last week we had reported on the law that the Capital Territory had passed. While Australia's highest court struck down that landmark law on Thursday, it had begun allowing the country's first gay marriages. Obviously, shooting that down shattered the dreams of dozens of same-sex newlyweds whose marriages will now be annulled less than a week after their weddings. The federal government had challenged the validity of the Australian Capital Territory's law that had allowed gay marriages in the nation's capital starting Saturday. The High Court unanimously ruled that the ATC's law could not operate concurrently with the Federal Marriage Act, which was amended in 2004 to define marriage as between a man and a woman. In India, a ruling by India's Supreme Court makes consensual same-sex conduct between adults a criminal offense. This is a body blow to people's rights to equality, privacy, and dignity, Amnesty International India said. The Supreme Court overturned a historic ruling by the Delhi High Court in 2009, which had decriminalized consensual same-sex activity between adults. The Delhi High Court had ruled in 2009 that allowing the consensual adult same-sex relationships or not allowing them was discriminatory and violated the rights to equality, privacy, and dignity set forth in the Indian Constitution. But the Supreme Court disagreed, saying that Section 377, which criminalized carnal intercourse against the order of the nature, was constitutionally valid. But the court also said that the government could take legislative steps to repeal the law. And you should watch the news for that, because I think that's going to happen. In Tokyo, Japan's Supreme Court this week ruled that a toddler born to a transgender man and his wife through artificial insemination shall be regarded as their legitimate child. This landmark ruling was the first by a Japanese court in that country where there are currently no laws that stipulate who shall be regarded as the father of children born through artificial insemination by donor. In Brazil on Friday, despite Brazil having one of the highest murder rates of LGBT people in the world, and certainly the highest recorded murder rates of specifically trans people, Brazilian lawmakers shelled a draft law that would have prohibited discrimination and violence on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. If passed, the law would have called for up to 3 years in prison for anyone found guilty of such offenses. Adele Savatti, Brazil's Minister of Institutional Relations, instructed the ruling party senators to shelve the bill until after next year's presidential election. According to reports, Minister Savatti acted on the instruction of President Dilma Rousseff in order to prevent the bill from making it to the Senate floor after that nation's evangelical religious lobby warned that any moves to vote on the bill would be penalized by their large and influential voting bloc. In Louisiana, the Times-Spokane reported that gay rights groups in northern Louisiana chalked up a win on Tuesday after the Supreme Court City Council, the Shreveport City Council passed a fairness ordinance banning discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodation. While state law does not bar discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, Shreveport voted 6-1 on Tuesday to pass a local ordinance banning discrimination factors based on those as well as race, color, sex, disability, age, and ancestry, and national origin. New Orleans is the only other city in Louisiana to already have such an ordinance in place. In Washington, D.C., the Washington Blade reported Thursday that the U.S. Senate confirmed a lesbian with a history of civil rights activism to another term on the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. By a largely party-line vote of 54-41, the Senate confirmed Chai Feldblum for a 5-year term on the bipartisan panel, which enforces federal laws against workplace discrimination. Senator Susan Collins, Republican, and Lisa Murkowski, Republican, who are known for their support for LGBT rights, were the only two Republicans to break from the GOP caucus to vote in favor of the confirmation. Feldblum is largely credited with coordinating a unanimous decision last year in the case of Macy versus Holder that interpreted Title VII of the Civil Rights Act protects transgender people. In the Pentagon, according to the Pentagon, all state National Guards are now compliant with an edict from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel requiring them to process spousal benefit applications for troops in same-sex marriages. In a statement provided to the Washington Blade, Hagel confirmed that all gay service members can apply for military IDs for their spouses at military installations throughout the country. A defense official speaking on the condition of anonymity said Mississippi, the last remaining holdout state, came on board sometime this week, although the official didn't have an exact date. The official said Mississippi is adopting a policy similar to Texas, Louisiana, and Georgia, which are placing state workers on federal status to process same-sex applications. And in New Jersey, the Star-Ledger reported that a New Jersey State Senate panel approved a bill on Thursday that would require the state health department to issue a new birth certificate for people who have completed the clinical process of altering their gender. A licensed health care provider would be required to certify that clinically appropriate treatment for the purpose of gender transition based on contemporary medical standards or that the person has an intersex condition. Previously, New Jersey law directed the State Department to only issue new birth certificates to those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery. That measure must still be approved by the full Senate, but the State Assembly had passed it by a 43-27 vote in June. And lastly, in Los Angeles, the mother of a gay asylum seeker is suing the United States and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Officer Garcia for the death of her son, Nelson Javier Avila Lopez, in federal court. Lopez was subjected to months of torture and death in a Honduran prison after being deported from the United States, despite having a stay of deportation through counsel. Lopez arrested without formal charges upon landing in Honduras and thrown into the notorious Comayuga prison. Her son died in Comayuga prison on Valentine's Day 2012, just prior to his 21st birthday, in a fire that killed 357 other prisoners along with him. Lopez seeks damages for negligence, wrongful death, and due process violations. And that's it for today. Back over to you, Pierce.
Thank you, Sandra, and we're going to go to an announcement.
I'm telling you why I am.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. This Sunday, December the 15th at 10 a.m., the forum will feature Stephen Youngblood, director of Park University Center for Global Peace Journalism. He will discuss framing within peace coverage of Mideast conflicts. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org. Listen to the All Souls Forum each Wednesday at noon on 90.1 FM KKFI.
This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Russia's highest court upholds the country's no-promo homo laws. British Olympian Tom Daley dives into a gay relationship. And Aussie crooner Nathan Lee Jones reinvents holiday classics. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
This Way Out airs 2 p.m. Saturdays, right after the 10th Voice.
And we are back, and I'm Pierce Patterson, and of course this is the 10th Voice, and I'm very excited to announce our two guests that are here in the studio with me, Brian Hinkey and Gabe York.
Thanks for having us, Pierce.
And we are going to talk about your beautiful daughter, Kennedy, who you adopted, and I'm going to ask you first, when did you actually adopt Kennedy?
We made the decision, well, let me preface this by saying Brian and I actually are celebrating our 15 years this month. So ever since we were together from day one, we both knew that we wanted children at some point. It just took us 14 years to get there. We decided, I think it was October of 2011, we finally made the decision. We're both in the same place. Let's do this. We're ready to adopt. So in December of 2011, we signed with an adoption agency. And then in April of 2012, Kennedy was born. So we kind of tell people we had a child in less amount of time it takes for a woman to naturally have a child. But that's kind of how it works with Brian and I. When we decide we want to do something, things just kind of fall into place. We're pretty lucky that way.
I was going to say, that sounds like almost going to the car dealer and saying and ordering your car and having it ready in 2 months.
Yeah, we didn't want to wait. So it's kind of the instant gratification. Actually, I'll tell you the honest to God's truth. I was scared about the whole adoption process. I was scared about having a child. We finally came to a point where we decided to have one, and I put the stipulation that if we didn't have a child or were in line to get a child by the time I turned 40, then I wanted to stop the process. I was 38 at the time. So I think bigger things in the universe had plans for us because 4 months later we had a baby in our arms.
So you said way back, even going back 14 years, you guys had planned at some point to have children. Did you think that you would go through it with this methodology, or did you think you would do it differently?
We thought about every different way.
Yeah, I think originally when we got together, my sister's going to love this, but my plan was for Brian's sperm to be inseminated to my sister and she would have the baby. Unfortunately, she had a hysterectomy, so that kind of got thrown out the window, and then we had to go back to square one again. But there was always the thought of, well, we'll have a friend that's going to get pregnant and we'll take the baby, or, we were always involved with the church when we lived here in Kansas City. You know, we always thought there would be a random avenue that somehow a baby would just show up, and that would be like our calling to parent at that point.
Then we realized you actually had to put some work into it.
Yeah.
And so we did it.
The stork didn't come.
the stork didn't come down the chimney and drop off the child.
No, we waited, and damn bird.
Well, that then would frames my next question perfectly. Gay adoption. What state did you choose to go through to begin your adoption process?
Missouri. So we were living in Missouri. We're from Kansas City. We've moved all over the place for work. The last transfer that we had was to St. Louis. So we were in St. Louis when we finally decided we wanted to adopt. We did some research trying to find what adoption agency to go through. And we actually found an adoption agency that specialized in gay adoption, and they were based in Atlanta. So we actually ended up signing with that adoption agency. So we flew to Atlanta, had numerous meetings, workshops, that sort of thing, really started the process. You have to get a home study to be able to have an adoption. They were not licensed to do a home study in the state of Missouri. So what they did was help to find an adoption agency that would be willing to do a home study in Missouri for a gay couple, which was kind of a struggle for them to begin with. But they did find an agency in St. Louis that would facilitate the home study for us. So they came, we started doing the home study, and it was actually through that agency is where we found Kennedy. It wasn't through the agency in Atlanta, which was kind of interesting. So we actually had to stop our relationship with the agency in Atlanta and start a relationship with the agency in Missouri to be able to legally facilitate the adoption. So, yeah, it ended up Missouri.
Okay, because I don't. Every state has different laws regarding adoption, just general adoption. Mm-hmm. But of course, then you add in gay adoption, and you go into a whole different realm. Which was that ever daunting? Did you ever think, "Oh my gosh"?
The one hiccup that we ran into, and it wasn't really a hiccup, it was just, it's what elongated the time frame of adoption for us, is that in Missouri, Gabe had to be the primary person to adopt Kennedy first as a single parent. And then we had to go through a waiting process until I could get on the birth certificate as well. So we had to do twice what a heterosexual couple would typically only have to do once.
Now, do you know if, and this is if my legal team were here this morning, I would actually pose this question to them. But now that the laws have changed regarding gay marriage in other states, would you have elected to get married first had you had the option at the time? Well, actually, it was only a year ago, so you mm-hmm. did have the option.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about going to Iowa and getting married. We've done that numerous times. We had our wedding ceremony years ago in Mexico, and we had all of our family and friends there, and it was great. So to us, we're married and we've been married. I think it comes down to a legally binding contract at this point when we decide to facilitate the marriage.
With all the changes in the laws going into effect right now, especially with the repeal of DOMA and now with Governor Nixon saying that for tax purposes, gay individuals who get married in the state where it's legal should file their tax returns as such. The landscape's changed so much since we just started the adoption process. I have no doubt that we'll get married. Problem was at the time we would have had to stay and lived in that state, so that would have been Iowa.
We prefer
nothing
Kansas.
Wrong, yeah. Nothing wrong with Iowa. I've got friends from Iowa listening right now, but I don't particularly want to live there.
Well, Annette, you mentioned something about the laws at the time. Do you feel that the laws were on your side when you were going through the adoption process, or did you ever feel like that, or experience, not just feel it, but did you experience if they were not?
I don't know that I personally didn't feel the laws were on our side. I felt like we had people on our side that were able to find the loopholes in the laws so that we'd be able to move forward. I think that is really what it kind of comes down to. Even with the adoption, it came down to the moment of us sitting in front of the judge, and the judge easily could have said no. So all the process, all the hard work, and all the money and effort and love and attention that we put into it, at the end of the day, the judge could have said no, and that could have been the end of it.
We've had very good people guide us through the process. We had a very good lawyer, a family lawyer in St. Louis that assisted us. We had good people through the social services departments that we worked with, the placement agency that we worked with in St. Louis. They told us the right things to do, the right things to say, the right places to be. And so it's to their credit that we were able to get through the process without really any challenges.
And actually, in changing gears, when you guys decided to adopt a child, among your single and coupled gay friends who do or do not have children, did you suddenly, I'm seeing, you're like,
to say that.
Well, and did, I'm sure there were, it was a mixed bag. Yeah. Did you lose friends over this, adopting a child?
No, we didn't lose at all. I think in the beginning it was definitely a shock for some of our closer friends. And I think there's still a lot of growing pains that we're going through now. You know, we don't take the crazy vacations that we used to take, and we don't have the 5-course, 4-hour meals that cost hundreds of dollars. Like, things just, priorities are just different than what they were in the past. I can say, though, that the friendships that we have, I think, have grown stronger as a result of it, and we truly view them as our family and as Kennedy's aunts and uncles. So I think that it's helped to strengthen it in some aspects. What are your thoughts?
No, I feel the same way. There was definitely shock when we announced our decision just to start the process, let alone being placed so quickly. We were living away from the majority of our friends at the time. We were in St. Louis. We were on our own. So I think that there were questions about how are they going to take care of a baby on their own? What do they know about taking care of the baby? You know, we see them, you know, little enough as it is. What's it going to be like? It was all before Kennedy came along. And since she's come along, I mean, we take her places. She goes to the parties with them. Not the parties with us.
There's 3 a.m.
You know, no. You know, if there's a social gathering during the afternoon, during her normal waking hours that she attends with.
During normal baby hours.
Yeah. Right, but I think that it was such a foreign concept to our friendship group, the whole baby thing. You know, now we have one of our dear friends just delivered a baby 2 weeks ago, and she followed us along the process, and she kind of garnered some knowledge that way. And so we're kind of blessed to have a friendship group that now is kind of, I don't know, I don't know if it's our turn to start having kids, but they've been very supportive.
So you've gravitated toward other gay lesbian couples that have children?
No, she's straight.
Yeah,
no. It's her straight friend that just had a baby. But we don't know many other gay or lesbian couples in Kansas City that have babies. We toyed around with some adoption groups in St. Louis before we moved. And then having a baby is such an overwhelming responsibility and time commitment that all of our quote-unquote free time to go and attend the meetings and go and meet other parents, it just kind of got sucked out the door. In St. Louis, I did used to go. We had a good friend that took us down to the park that we lived by that had a big farmer's market on a Saturday. And I did meet some really nice lesbian couples that had children that invited us to different groups and such. But at that point, we were in the process of moving back to Kansas City. So we just kind of came here.
So do you guys see yourselves doing the same things now that a straight parent would do? Or, in other words, how do you differentiate yourselves from straight people, or are you differentiating yourselves from, you know, you probably don't sit there and say, oh, honey, we don't want to be like straight people. Hmm. But by nature, you're two men with a child. How does that affect how you go through your daily lives differently than perhaps how your parents raised you?
I don't know. I mean, I think we view ourselves as parents, not necessarily two gay men that have a kid. You know, we're raising a kid. That's what we're about. I would say probably, I don't know, from what I've witnessed in the past, maybe our house is a little bit cleaner than, I don't know.
The color really, choices are far more popular.
There's not toys strewn all
I'm
over the house.
My mouth on this one. We are just two men raising our daughter. I don't see us any different than any other parent. I know there are a lot of people out there who would view us as different, but we're refusing to look at ourselves like that. And we don't look at other people like that either. We love our baby, you know, and we're going to raise her right, and we're going to teach her right, and we're going to show her all the love in the world. And if that makes us different, then that makes us different. But she's going to know peace, and she's going to know gratitude, and she's going to know a lot of things that seem to be lacking in the everyday world. And if that's what differentiates us, then we're lucky people.
That's awesome. Because that a lot of times, and one of the other things too that I was thinking of is when you're going, let's say you're walking around, you're two guys, you're walking around with a baby. When people walk up to you, and Brian, we were talking outside in the green room about people's reaction to you carrying a baby, and everybody wants to hold Kennedy and be with her. Have you ever experienced anyone having that aha moment? You can look in their eyes and see that they realize you're two guys with a baby, or do they just assume that you're a couple of guys out with a kid?
In the very beginning, Kennedy was just a couple of months old, and I flew from St. Louis to Kansas City with her to come see family. And I was standing in line trying to go through security, and a man and a woman in front of me had a baby very similar in age. And he turned around and he goes, "Oh my God, beautiful baby." We started sharing stories. He said, "Where's mom?" I said, "There's not a mom. It's two dads." And he kind of got shocked, and he just kind of looked at me and like grabbed his wife's hand, and you could tell he wasn't angered or upset by it. He was just like, "Oh my God, like I've seen this on TV. Like it's really happening." You know what I mean? And of course he says, "Are you going to Kansas City?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, do you know so-and-so?" Because it was a gay friend that he had that worked at St. Luke's. "Well, no, I don't, you know, but we have to all know each other."
Bob, you mean the other gay guy?
Yeah,
in Kansas?
Exactly. Yeah.
He's the one that does that parade every summer.
Right.
You know, by himself.
I've had those moments. I had an instance at Price Chopper a couple months ago. And Kennedy was fussing, and we were in the checkout lane. And a woman behind me said, "She just needs her mommy." And I thought, yeah, well, there's not a mommy. And I think there's sometimes where people just don't understand what they're saying. And
I've been put on the defensive. Well, not really. I go on the defensive a lot easier now that I have a baby, but I've always been ready with a comeback if somebody were to say something smart to me or something sharp to me to try to dig at me. I haven't really had to use what's in my arsenal yet, so that's a good thing. But living where we live and the times that we live, somebody's going to say something because it's their right, and that's fine. And I think that what I try to do now is I need to try to focus on being calm and seeing things from other people's perspectives. It's natural, I guess, for people to say daddy and mommy or, you know, where's mama or where's daddy, and that's fine. I need to learn not to pull out my comebacks if people say that rather than just to calmly explain, well, it's daddy and dad or, you know, it's Gabe and I, there's no mom. Although I have to tell you that Kennedy is walking around the house going, mom, 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 and we're like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, I think she's singing Lady Gaga, actually.
That's what it is.
Of course she is. Well, Brian and Gabe, there are so many more questions that I have, but this hour is flying by, and I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your story with us and I'm so excited that you're raising a child in the way that you are in the world that we live in. It's awesome. So thanks for coming in and sharing your experience.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot, Pierce.
Certainly.
Support for KKFI provided by Californos and Westport, presenting on Saturday, December 21st at 9 p.m., a holiday concert with Wells, The Traveler, and Supermassive Black Holes, providing a unique fusion of British rock and American folk styles. More information and a full calendar of upcoming musical and special events can be found at www.californos.com.
Why the military ignores spousal abuse on the Next Wings, Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
Funding for KKFI provided by Medical Lodges. Medical Lodges appreciates people who take a little time out of their schedule during the holiday season to give blood. Your donation will help protect and save the lives of accident victims, leukemia patients, and many others who will be in need. Do your part today and donate blood. This message is brought to you by Medical Lodges in Kansas City, wishing everyone a happy holiday season.
We're back, and of course, I'm Pierce Patterson, and we are back with the second half of the 10th Voice here on 90.1 FM KKFI. And on the line, I have Zach Petrick. Linda, do we have Zach on the line now? Let's see.
I'm here.
He's here. Perfect. Well, good afternoon, Zach.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. And for everyone listening, this is Zach Petrick, and I am speaking to him from Grand Forks, North Dakota. And just for grins, would you let our listeners know what the temperature is in Grand Forks right now?
It's a bit of a heat wave, so we broke zero today.
Whoa. That's it's making us appreciate our 20-something degrees and clouds then.
It gives a little perspective.
Absolutely. Well, just to let our listeners know, Zach, you and I are going to talk about a magazine that you collect and you have researched and studied, and it's called, correct me if I'm wrong, the magazine is called One Magazine, correct?
Yep. It was published they started in 1953, and it ran all the way through 1967. And it was actually the first magazine or the first U.S. publication to ever talk about homosexuality in a positive light.
And listeners, so it was 1953 to 1967.
Correct.
And did people just write editorials for it? And I remember when I was visiting and met you in Grand Forks, we were looking at some of these publications that you have ordered and have collected. How many? Do you know how many actual publications of this magazine were done in that time frame?
I don't have a number as far as how many there that were published. They typically published them on a monthly basis, but they had issues with their court battle, and they had some financial issues through that 12-year span, a 15-year span while they were publishing them. And so there were certain months where they weren't able to publish a magazine, and then there were months that they ended up doubling up. So I kind of figure out how many there are as I research and as I get them myself. The magazine itself, it had articles, editorials. They would put short stories in them. Then they would also talk about any other kind of gay publications that were out at the time. And then they also had letters to the editors and stuff like that.
In the 1950s, of course, we're talking McCarthyism and communism and all of the Red Scares. And, of course, the magazine was also published all the way into the Kennedy years, the Cuban Missile Crisis period. During the McCarthy years, did this publication run into any trouble being distributed?
They ran into quite a bit of trouble, actually. In 1954, they were based out of Los Angeles, and they would mail them out across the country and actually across the world. And in 1954, they ran one of their magazines had the title on the cover, and it said homosexual marriage, and there was a question mark. And the Postmaster General in Los Angeles actually seized it, and they held it for 3 weeks, and then they released it and didn't say anything about it. And then shortly after that, it was seized again, and it was declared to be obscene. And that ended up setting off a court battle that lasted 4 years, and it made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And then, to everyone's surprise, all the lower courts had said, you know, it is obscene, and you can't be selling it, you can't be sending it out to the Postal Service. And then the Supreme Court actually took the case, which surprised a lot of people. And then when they finally did have their ruling on it, it was a very short ruling, and they didn't address the topic of homosexuality in any way. All they said in a nutshell was it's not obscene, they're allowed to send it, and that was it. And there was one poor guy that was fresh out of law school that did the whole legal fight pretty much by himself.
And the case was won.
It was, and it kind of opened up the floodgates so that people, because up until that point, you couldn't really talk about homosexuality. And, you know, a lot of people don't really realize, I think, how bad things were not that long ago and what a big deal it was for the American Psychological Association to change their stance on homosexuality. They talk about in these magazines how up until that point you could be deemed a sexual deviant or, you know, mentally ill, and they could lock you up for it. And there was little to nothing that you could do. You could be sent to prison or you could be sent to an asylum. And there was a lot of fear as far as communism. Homosexuality and communism tended to go hand in hand. And when the magazine first started being published, it was right after Eisenhower signed Executive Order 10450, and it ended up outing 400 gay people that were in the public service, and it was a very public outing. So there was a lot of shame involved, and names were published in newspapers, and then they fired everybody and destroyed a lot of lives in the process.
In the 1950s, I'd like you to read an excerpt from one of the magazines from the 1950s. You can tell us the date that you choose to get a sense of the mood among gay people at the time.
Well, one of the magazines, the cover is actually the homosexual villain, and it's January 1955, and they discuss what was going on in Miami, Florida at the time. And beginning in 54, the mayor of Miami had gotten onto a bit of a kick about ridding the city of the perverts, and he ends up going toe-to-toe with his city manager and his chief of police, because he didn't feel that they were being hard enough on him. And he actually, and you have to bear in mind, this is the mayor of a major U.S. city putting out press releases. And one of the releases he said was, part of it said that he would introduce a resolution for the dismissal of Evans, his city manager, if he failed at once to order the chief of police, Headley, to harass and drive out the sex deviants. And on August 26th, a few days before that, he put out another one that said, you will give Evans just 1 week from the time that he gets back from vacation to clean out certain pervert nests in Miami proper. I firmly believe it is a disgrace to have a place on Biscayne Boulevard whose business caters to the distorted minds which enjoy seeing a bunch of fairies perform where the sky seems the limit. And that's coming from the mayor's office in Miami, Florida.
1955. The term, when I was reading some of these magazines, it's a fascinating read. And actually, I'm very, just to give people the background, you're in your early 20s, and you collect these magazines. You've gone on eBay, you've purchased them, looking for them, and I think that's an amazing treasure trove of history that you're collecting. And one of the words that I noticed that they used back in the 1950s was the term homophile. Was that another word for homosexual that they just used in the 1950s? Was someone a homophile or a homosexual?
You would have been it was the nicest thing you could have been called at that point, more or less. It was between that, pervert, and deviant.
So a homophile, and actually, in reading some of the editorials in those magazines and letters to the editor, people refer to themselves as homophiles.
Yes.
So it was not necessarily a derogatory term, but used by the wrong people would have been.
Yeah, I mean, in a roundabout way.
Okay. So that's the mood of the 1950s. The marriage issue that you said that was actually confiscated by the Postmaster General, that issue, what did they talk about with gay marriage in that issue? And what was the date of that issue again?
That would have been August of 1953. And it didn't get picked up because of the content of what was in the pages itself. It was just having that on the cover. When you read the article itself, it just talks about the logistics of gay marriage and what that would mean and how it would impact gender roles. And they talk about the promiscuity that is associated with gay culture and would homosexuals themselves be willing to change something like that? Could they? And it's kind of interesting because at the very end of it, there's actually a paragraph disclaimer saying that they're not promoting anything illegal. They're just discussing it.
So the issue was promotion. That was the technicality that they used to avert prosecution. Was to say that,
well,
it wasn't promotion, it was just speaking of it.
Yeah, it raised some red flags, and what finally actually did the magazine in and brought about the court case was there had been the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman, Alexander Wiley of Wisconsin, who was a Republican, came across one of the issues, and the cover was the importance of being different, and he ended up being so offended by it that he went to the U.S. Postmaster and he protested against it, and he kind of made it his mission to get the magazine to run it out of business. When he wrote the Postmaster at the time, he said that it runs utterly contrary to every moral principle. It runs utterly contrary to our intentions to safeguard our nation's youngsters, and likewise, it is very opposite the entire purpose of our government and security program.
So at the time, that this magazine was published, let's say it's in 1954, and I'm a homosexual in Kansas City, Missouri. How would I have even known this publication existed to be able to find it, to read it?
A lot of people ended up, they would pass it around. So if one person got it that had a little less to lose, you could pay extra and have it mailed to your house wrapped so that nobody would know what was coming. But, you know, through reading some of the gay history books, they talk about it, but they say that, you know, a lot of what people would do is one person that didn't have as much on the line would subscribe to it, and then they would pass them around to their friends. And it was a very small magazine. In the first couple of years, they only had, you know, the first year I think they had 1,200 subscribers, and by the second year they had 2,000. And I've heard anywhere between 5,000 and 8,000 was their peak. But when they ran into the issues with the court battles, after it was confiscated the first time, they were already financially stressed, so they didn't want to have to take on a big legal challenge. So they came up, they chartered a new set of rules as far as what kind of content could go into the magazine to try and keep that legal battle from happening. And it hurt the magazine itself because a lot of people felt that the content that was inside the pages wasn't what it had been, and the staff themselves had begun to get frustrated, and they started breaking their own rules. And the issue that did them in, I don't have that issue, but from what I've read, they had stories in there. Up until that point, the stories had never, it had just been talking about longing and a desire to be with somebody, and they had actually said that they had physically touched in the stories in that issue. And in the back, there was an ad for men's sleepwear. And by today's standards, it would be considered a T-shirt commercial. But back then, it was racy enough, and it was those two things that they were able to use against them to deem it to be obscene.
So how did this article, how did this magazine survive? You said that there was an advertiser. Did it survive on advertisements or its subscribership base at the time?
It was both. They did have people that were advertising in it. A lot of the advertising was done, it was based out of Los Angeles, and a lot of the advertising that was in it was through different businesses in Los Angeles, and there wasn't a lot. And then the rest of it would have been made up with member subscriptions. But between the cost of the court battle and the cost of printing and publishing it, they ended up running financially. I mean, it was run into the ground pretty hard. They had $15,000 in debt to their publisher alone by the 60s.
And that's a lot of money in the late 50s.
Yeah.
$16,000, a new car was $2,000 or $3,000.
Yes. So, I mean, there were a lot of issues, and the issues only got worse through the years. Eventually, the group itself split because the business manager and the editor couldn't come to an agreement. And in 65, they both split. And then there was another court battle as far as who could retain the name and who gets to hold on to the physical property, because at that point, they had accumulated a bit of an archive of gay history. And so after that, the court ruled that one side got to keep the name and the other side got to keep the library that they had accumulated. But unfortunately, shortly after that, they quit publishing them.
Was there a name of a person that was associated with this magazine from its inception all the way to its closure? Was there ever one or two people who stuck with it through its entire duration that are named in the publications throughout time, throughout the duration of the magazine? And did that person or persons ever face, that you're aware of, any sort of prosecution for putting this magazine out?
The vast majority of the people that were involved in the magazine, from the people that were writing the editorials to the people that were writing the stories to the people that were actually writing the magazine, all use different pseudonyms. But today their names are out there. Dore Legg He was one of the guys that was involved in it, and he was the magazine's editor. And then Don Slater was the other guy. He was the manager. And after they split, Mr. Slater ended up starting a new organization, the Homosexual Information Center, and then that actually survived up until today. It still operates, but they ended up merging with another group, but that's one of the only groups that's still operating today. I believe that's the oldest group still operating today. And it all came to be out of the magazine came to be because in 1952, the Mattachine Society, they held a meeting, and they discussed the idea of a magazine, and by 1953, they were able to roll it out. But as far as them facing any issues, they did. The FBI actually ended up outing all of the people that were running the magazine and sent letters to their employers to try and get them fired and try and intimidate them. You have to remember that Hoover himself was keeping files on anybody that was known to be a homosexual at the time.
Once the 1950s were beginning to come to a close and the 1960s were opening up, Kennedy was elected, civil rights was on the table, it was a discussion, there were riots, this magazine was still in existence. Did you, in your reading of the magazine, did you or do you see a change in tone of the editorials? Even though the magazine was embroiled in its own controversies, the people that wrote into the magazines, the readership that published their when they published the letters to the editor, do you see a change, a bright outlook, a hope, a belief that things are going to get better as the 1960s came about and then as it went through the 1960s?
The editorials themselves are quite a melting pot throughout the entire magazine. The general tone of the magazine itself, I guess I feel, changes as you go from the 1950s to the 1960s. In the 50s, it was more of a tone of change is possible, but none of us are going to see it in our lifetime. And then by the time the 60s rolled around, the magazine itself had changed where the idea was is that they were eventually going to try and start organizing more to get some more tangible action going. And it went from a tone of there will one day be change, things will one day get better, to how do we make things better? How do we change things now? And they did do a little bit as far as trying to organize, and they put out a quarterly review that talked more about how to go about instigating change now. And actually, the issue where they talk about homosexual marriage, one of the things they say in there is, imagine that the year were 2053 and homosexuality were accepted to the point of being no importance. Now the deviant is allowed to continue his pursuit of physical happiness without the restraint he attempts to do today. When you see a number like 2053, I don't think they quite imagine the change that would eventually come about. But the editorials also, there was a lot of issues at the time where you would have police that weren't investigating the killings of gay men. There were instances where the police were beating gay men or women too. The magazine also had a section that was devoted to lesbians, and you see a lot of editorials. The ones I really enjoy are the ones where it's people that they found out their friend was gay, or they came across the magazine and it never occurred to them to think about homosexuality as just being part of who somebody was, and people would write in and say that your magazine offered me a perspective that never occurred to me before, and it's really changed the way I think about homosexuality. But on the flip side of it, there were also editorials where people were disgusted by what they were doing. I couldn't come across the one issue, but there was one where a guy, I'm assuming it was a younger kid, had found this in his brother's collection of magazines, And he was so offended and so disgusted by it that he actually threatened to, he said, I have a 38 if my brother ever tries to advance on me in any way, and I'm not afraid to use it on him. So, I mean, it's, to read these things, it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster.
I would imagine, because I was on an emotional roller coaster when I read them, and I'm going to put that out there, that if anyone has a copy of One magazine, if anyone out there is listening, or anyone that knows anyone that might have this historical publication, let us know on our Facebook page, The 10th Voice KKFI, or send an email to KKFI, The 10th Voice, and let us know. And we'd love to have it and continue to get this collection larger, because it is an amazing bit of history. And Zach, I'm very thankful that you are investing in collecting this, because holding on to gay history is so important, especially among the youth of today. And Zach Petrick, I'd like to thank you for joining us today and sharing your knowledge and experience of this magazine with us.
Absolutely, and it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Linda, we are going to go to an announcement.
This is Amy Bell, co-host of Every Woman. Join me and Sharon Lockhart with co-host and storyteller Molly Postlewaite and feminist and trans activist Stephanie Mott this Saturday at 3 p.m. right here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you, Linda. And thank you to Zach Petrick, who joined us just a moment ago for the interview. And now we have Mike Popa here to read the 10th Voice Community Calendar.
Hello.
Hello, Mike. I'm very glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here. Appreciate it. I could listen to your voice all day, Pierce.
You know what? Thank you. Linda can't get enough of my voice either.
Right. She's over there swooning right now.
Right. She's swooning because she's lying on the floor snoring.
Right. Actually. Right.
Mike.
I said swooning. I meant snoring.
Exactly. Yes. The other S.
Right.
So what's going on in the gay world?
Well, there's a lot going on in the gay world, especially holiday season. Tonight at Hamburger Mary's, we have the holiday benefit show for Like Me Lighthouse. Actually, two shows this evening, one at 7 and one at 10, $5 in advance and $10 at the door. Also tonight, the Kansas City Women's Chorus presents I'll Be Home for Christmas at the Folly Theater at 8 o'clock. And they return again tomorrow at 4 p.m. At the Folly Theater as well. Okay. And that's the I'll Be Home for Christmas concert. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. at Unity Temple on the Plaza, we have the Mid-American Freedom Band concert, Holidays Around the World. On Tuesday, December the 17th, it's a holiday shopping at Stuff in Brookside. And that's Stuff, the store, stuffed with wonderful stuff. It's for Good Samaritan Project. Sorry, guys. This is my first time on here.
You know what?
It can only get better from this.
We are very excited. Yes, Mike is. I put him under a time constraint, and he's doing an excellent job. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks so much. All right. I hope I can be like you very soon.
Linda's rolling. Pierce has a gun to his head.
Right.
He's saying those things.
Wednesday, December 18th, a Christmas concert at Californo's that's starring Krista Collins, Miss Gay Missouri 2013, Loretta Martin, and Kirk Nelson. We have Thursday, December the 19th, charity bingo night for PFLAG at Hamburger Mary's. And for the things that I did not get to on the calendar, you can always go to our Facebook page. That's the 10th Voice at KK or the 10th Voice KKFI on Facebook, and check out all the additional information.
Well, and Mike, thank you for coming in and being put in the frying pan immediately. We're very happy to have you here, and you have a wonderful radio voice too. Thank you.
Oh, could you hear it through all that stuttering?
You know, you've got the stuff, and you're racing through it. And you know what? It gets better with time.
Right, right.
The community calendar is very important to our listeners, and I'm very glad that you are here today to present it to our listeners.
Hey, I'm really happy to be here.
So we look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of The 10th Voice.
Definitely.
So thank you.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
And of course, stay tuned for the national weekly GLBT news magazine, This Way Out, and email your comments, questions, or story ideas to us at the 10th voice at kkfi.org. The news at the top of the hour was researched and produced by Sandra Mead. The 10th Voice Community Calendar was produced by Michael Popa and Brent Husher. Sound engineering for today's broadcast of the 10th Voice was created by Linda Wilson. And, of course, I'm Pierce Patterson. And thank you for joining us today. I heard in the room, of course you're Pierce Patterson. Yes, I am. And so I'm very happy to let you all know that, you know what, that's it. We're done, Linda. So anyway.
Stick a fork in you?
we are so done. So, of course.
Good job, and welcome to the team.
Hey, thanks. I'm really happy to be here.
I know. I gave a little bit of extra time for Mike to introduce himself and let everybody get to hear him and get to know him. And, you know, that's my fault for not doing that.
No, quite all right. I was just did not want to go over, so I wanted to make sure you had enough time to close it up, to wrap it up.
And
anything you need to know?
Nothing in particular.
Didn't think so.
Other than.